Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You breathing?
I'm breathing fine. Why?
Probably wondering if I was there.
No, I heard you.
We have Merrill Reese coming up, huh?
Yeah. When did I tell? Was it tomorrow? I don't have the schedule in front of me. Well, I have Larry Michael also scheduled for this week, and I have to look at the schedule. So we'll talk Eagles and Redskins. Let's see. Larry's going to be on Wednesday.
That's tomorrow.
That would be tomorrow. And when did I tell you Merrill's going to be on?
Today at 4:06.
Oh, that's right.
But before we get to that,
yes, time now for our. All right. Hang on a second.
Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Just wait a minute. Okay, now I'm ready.
Now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Top of the circle. Dishes off for Sekera. Wrist shot. Save. Rebound. Score! Andre Sekera against his former team. His second overtime winner this year. And the Oilers pull it out.
Edmonton Oilers last night get the win on the overtime goal and thus get the victory. So what do we have on the schedule? You're the producer.
I'm only a good producer, I guess, in the morning. I don't know.
Oh, we have Bobby Bell on just now. That worked out great, don't you think? What do you think? I thought that worked out
great. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. All right. Well, just let me know when we're set to go with Merrill, and we'll go from there. And tonight, hoops, Penn State basketball, Minnesota at the Jordan Center. Two young teams. Minnesota's a young team trying to find their way as well. And so that has been, now they're off to an 0-2 start
and
in conference play.
I have Merrill on the line now.
That's great. All right. Merrill, welcome. It is great to have you with us.
It's good to be with you.
All right, Merrill, let's get to it. I mean, I don't think anything along the way has surprised you as to how this has played out. In the end, I mean, what are your thoughts as you now you've had a chance to reflect on what you've watched the last 3 to 4 months?
Very disappointed. A season that showed signs of going out of kilter early, and each time you thought it was just about over, the team would do something positive. I thought flying home from Detroit on Thanksgiving Day that the end was near for this regime, because I thought about the owners sitting there and feeling totally embarrassed about the team getting killed by a motley group of Detroit Lions on national television. But then a couple of weeks later, they beat the Patriots, and they were right in it again. But then it all came down to that final game, well, not the final game, the 15th week of the season, 15th game, against the Washington Redskins, and they couldn't line up. I mean, they came to the line of scrimmage and went offsides or illegal formation or illegal procedure. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I said, it's 1st and 15 for the Eagles. I mean, just time and time again. And they were doing the same things poorly that they did at the beginning of the season. And I felt it was only a matter of time. I felt that when the season was over, Chip Kelly was going to be dismissed. It happened the week before. It happened 6 days or 5 days before. That was a surprise that it happened before the last game, but it was going to happen.
Merrill, what kind of shape were the Eagles in the day he took the job, and what kind of shape are the Eagles in now that he's departed?
Interesting question. I would say that when he took the job, they had DeSean Jackson, they had Shady McCoy, they had Jeremy Maclin. That's a pretty good three. Then they had Evan Mathis. They had in his prime Todd Herrmanns, and on and on. I think really they were in better shape for him than he's leaving them for somebody else. That being said, there are still some star players on this team. And he also inherited, by the way, Fletcher Cox. There are some still very, very good players on this team. I think whoever takes over this team is going to get a team with some talent. The one I mentioned before, Fletcher Cox, who is as good a defensive end slash defensive tackle as you'll find in the National Football League. I believe the guy they have to sign to make this a very quick fix is Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford, I thought that was the best move that Chip made, in retrospect, of course. I didn't like seeing Nick Foles go at the time. But watching Sam Bradford, the thing I worried most about him was, can he take the hitting? Is he going to tear that ACL for the third straight time? But he didn't. The knees held up well. He took a lot of battering. He was rusty, as you would think he would be after a year and a half of inactivity. But as the season came on and as it progressed, from game seven on, he was an outstanding quarterback and just kept getting better and better and better. Throws a great ball, is a leader in the locker room. I think that gives them a great advantage, because in this league, you have to have a quarterback. You have to have an exceptional quarterback to do well, even if it's one who becomes exceptional under your tutelage, as Kirk Cousins has done for Washington this year. But they have that guy, and I think that's a big thing. But they cannot let him get away, even if they have to franchise him.
Can Bradford thrive in more of a, and Chip ran a lot of traditional stuff, but in a more traditional NFL offense that we see, can Bradford be that kind of quarterback for you?
I think it makes him a better quarterback. I don't think Sam Bradford is an ideal zone read quarterback. Not that he ran too many of those plays, but I think in a more traditional offense or a West Coast offense, Bradford's even better than he was as utilized by Chip.
Okay, the next part will be, of course, obviously getting a coach and how the management structure will fall into place. And then there's going to be combines and a draft. What are going to be a couple of areas right away, Merrill, that they need to look at, that they'll need have to fill needs either through free agency or the draft?
Well, first of all, they have to get a coach. We know that.
Yeah,
Mike and I have volunteered to take the job, but I don't think that's going to work out very well. I said, you guys just continue to coach from your broadcast booth each week. So they've got to get a good coach. And I'll tell you what, I don't know where they're going with this thing, but they could do a lot worse than to keep Pat Shurmur, because Pat is a good coach and a bright coach, and the players like him, and he showed on Sunday that this offense can work. It was a bad Giants defense, but they didn't line up offside. They only had three penalties the whole game, and he slowed down the tempo stuff. And he coaches differently than Chip, and he's well-liked in the locker room, which I will not say that throughout Chip was. There are a lot of things, but in terms of areas, Steve, I think that number one, assuming that Sam is back, number one, they must bolster the offensive line. Do you realize that after Lane Johnson, who was Chip's first draft choice, he never again in almost three drafts took another offensive lineman? That can't be.
Wow.
You cannot do that. You cannot. Andy Reid used to say you take two of them, whether you need them or not. You've got to have an offensive line, and that's, to me, is the main priority. I think they did pick up some people this year who can help. Walter Thurman kind of snuck in here as an unheralded free agent. Now, he is a free agent again, so they better go out and re-sign Walter, because he's a good safety, especially when paired with Malcolm Jenkins. And that was another good pickup by Chip. Malcolm Jenkins was a good free agent. Connor Barwin, terrific free agent. And, of course, D'Amico Ryans came before the year before Chip. But D'Amico's is getting long in the tooth, had some problems coming back from a torn Achilles, but D'Amico still has more football in him, and usually the farther away you get from that injury, the better you're going to be. So I think he can still play. But they still need inside linebacking. They got nothing, and I really stress the word nothing, from Kiko Alonso. That trade had to be one of the worst ever. Shady McCoy, the best running back in the modern history of the Philadelphia Eagles, for Kiko Alonso, who was missing in action most of the season. But I don't know. Maybe he's a year away from his injury, and he comes back and contributes next year. But but you can't assume anything. The best draft choice they've had recently was Jordan Hicks. And when it's hard to believe that when a rookie goes out of the lineup with an injury, that the defense is really going to take that kind of a monumental hit. But they did. They couldn't replace him, and they had a soft middle. So that's an area they get Jordan Hicks back, so that's good. But they still have to think about those outside linebackers. They're still not set at the corners. Byron Maxwell, for the zillion dollars that they gave him, was a big disappointment. And, you know, I think they got another good draft choice. I think this past draft class is not going to be bad. Eric Rowe can play a corner and play it well. Nolan Carroll was a good player, did well, but then he broke his ankle. So he's a free agent, and I would say that chances of re-signing him are probably not great.
You mentioned Pat Shurmur, who took over on Sunday, and I guess he's either interviewed for the job or is going to one of the two.
He did yesterday.
I think it was Jared Solomon from the Houston Chronicle wrote an article over the weekend about Bill O'Brien, which you and I both know very well.
Mm-hmm. You know him well. I know him from afar, but appreciate him.
Right. And the bottom line is that he said because of his pro experience with the Patriots, he understood how to treat men like men on a professional level, which he had talked to me several times about when he was here. And that Chip Kelly understood how to deal with it on a college level. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I don't know Bill O'Brien other than what I've seen, and I think he's impressive, and I'm happy to see him get to the playoffs this year for Houston. But I do know, I have watched Chip Kelly over the past couple of years, and when people ask me about my relationship with Chip Kelly, I answer honestly, I didn't have one. My longest conversation with Chip Kelly went, "Hi, Chip. Hi, Merle." And that was it. He was always in perpetual motion. There was never a chance to stop and chat, to get to know him, to know him on a level away from football. Even in the off season, when things slowed down or when you were at a mini camp, there was never an opportunity that I had where I could really say I got to know what he was like as a person. He was not a guy for any kind of small talk or any kind of relationship. I will tell you that I've been through these firings before, and usually you see emotion in the building. There's a secretary someplace sobbing into a Kleenex. There are some people shaking their heads and saying, boy, we're going to miss him. But when Chip was fired, you did not see that in the building. I don't want to say it was good riddance, don't let the door hit you in the backside, but it was more of a, okay, next man up. There he didn't connect with the operation. Dick Vermeil was amazing. Dick Vermeil made every person in that organization feel as if he or she was a part of every Eagle success. And when the team lost, he shouldered the blame by himself. Nobody felt that way with Chip Kelly. And I would say that there were coaches on the staff who had very little communication with him. This was his style. I don't know that he could change. But he's smart. There's no doubt about him being smart. I'm not saying he's not a good person. I'm sure that he does his charity things. I'm just saying that it's a very interpersonal. There's no personal approach. There's no warmth or no connection. The term that Jeffrey Lurie used is he'd like to see somebody with emotional intellect or emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. In other words, somebody who is bright and capable, but also can reach out and touch those around him in a way that that really connects and pushes them forward. I've always felt that when people talk to me, Steve, about the coaches that you're going to get next, they bring up these names. You hear them: Adam Gase, Hugh Jackson, you know, Dirk Cotter. They bring up all these coordinators. I say, I don't know. I can look and say, well, this guy has a great offense. This guy has a great defense. Does it really mean that much? To me, the great coaches are great administrators and great motivators. That's what separates the coaches, the great ones. The schemes and the brilliance and all that. Look, the brightest coach I've ever been around was Bud Carson. Bud Carson, who was the architect of the Steel Curtain, who was the guy who put together the number one defense, number one against the run pass, and overall with Jerome Brown and Reggie White, Clyde Simmons. Bud Carson was not a success as a head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Why? Because now, Bud Carson was a lot different than Chip Kelly. You got to know him, and you could sit in a room with him, and he was a wonderful, warm person, but he was not outgoing enough. I like a head coach that stands up, and he has a commanding presence. Andy Reid never won a Super Bowl, but boy, that locker room was behind Andy Reid. And if they weren't, he never would have taken them to five NFC Championship games and the Super Bowl. But Andy Reid had it. Dick Vermeil had it. You could sense that. And to be very honest with you, Chip Kelly did not have that in his arsenal.
Well, in the end, first of all, thanks for being with us. In the end, it's actually, with all due respect to him, his loss for not getting to know you. I mean, it really is. Merrill, thanks so much. Happy New Year to you. And thanks a lot for the time. Great respect. You and Mike had a great year.
Well, we had a lot of fun. We always love what we do, you know, even to the last game. It was football, and it was entertaining football. And certainly I wish Chip well, and I hope that maybe he finds a way to connect a little more at his next stop. But I always enjoy being on with you, Steve, and you do a great job. The Nittany Lion fans are very, very fortunate to have you calling their games.
Hey, thanks, Merrill. Happy New Year to you. We'll talk soon.
See you, Steve.
Merrill Reese, the voice, the legendary voice of the Philadelphia Eagles in what could be, I think, best stated as a candid conversation. We will come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Hey, that broadcasting class you took is really paying off.
Ain't the best co-host in the league for nothing, folks.
Oh.
Ball caught.
Our thanks to Merrill Reese and Bobby Bell for being on the show today. Oh, my goodness. All right.
Okay, so I accidentally had him at 4:35 in my head.
Yeah. We're going to have the beat writer for the Bengals on coming up this week.
What time will that be so I can write that down and I don't miss that one?
I'll take care of it.
Okay, great. At least there's somebody on this show working.
I got it. Okay. We're also going to have a piece on helmets and sensors in helmets. We'll do that.
Is that concussion sensor I keep hearing about?
Yes. We have that coming up. Larry Michael, we think.
No, I'm pretty sure about that one. I'm feeling good about that one.
You got that one? You're all set?
Tomorrow at 4:06.
Anthony Cosenza, by the way, is going to be on from the jungle later this week. Oh, my goodness. All right. One of the reasons I don't like idle speculation, which I addressed in the opening half hour, is the Chuck Pagano situation. Notice how Chuck wasn't fired? Did you notice that? Did you notice Chuck Pagano got a 4-year extension? That's why I don't like doing speculation.
Wasn't there also a story going around that they were talking to Sean Payton, too?
Yeah, but again, I think that's to cover everybody's backside. All right? I think that's what... Oh, yeah. Let's see. There was some smoke there. Okay. Marcus Fuller from the Pioneer Press is going to join us to talk about Minnesota basketball. Is that okay with you?
I'm good with that.
Okay.
Is that in the next half hour?
It's in the next half hour.
Okay. I got it written down. I'm good.
Okay. I got it. I got the ball here.
At least somebody on the show's working.
News is next.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And yes, the adventure continues. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. It's an easy one. Johnny Manziel. Blonde wig, sunglasses, mustache, Vegas. Unbelievable. And they expect that this dude can read a defense? Really? No way. Just no way. You just can't put a price on stuff like this. Kevin has brilliantly put together this half hour as the producer of the show. Bobby Bell, great get, Kev.
Thanks.
Merrill Reese, great get, Kev. That's where you say thanks.
Oh, sorry, thanks.
Oh, geez. Mentally, you're already at the basketball arena.
I'm already looking through rosters in my head.
Yeah, you've checked out. All right.
Some would say I've never checked in.
Oh, I don't want to get that into that right now. All right. Let's bring in Marcus Fuller, Pioneer Press. Penn State plays its basketball home opener tonight in the Big Ten. Both teams right now 0-2 in conference play. Must win for both sides. Marcus Fuller joins us from the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Marcus, hi. Welcome. Great to have you with us.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right, 6-8, they lost their first two. Where is Minnesota right now? Is this a rebuilding year for them, in your opinion, Marcus, or has there been some circumstances?
Well, I think this is kind of the year that Patino probably wished he had his first year, because there'd be a lot less pressure on him. You know, he inherited a team with some seniors, some veteran players, and, you know, took that team to the NIT championship his first year. And then, you know, last year I thought they were an NCAA tournament caliber team. It just didn't come together for him. So, you know, he lost four seniors. He brought in a lot of newcomers, mainly freshmen. There's four freshmen that he has in his rotation right now, and sometimes five. And so I think there's a lot of growing pains there. But at the same time, you know, when you play a home schedule with likes of South Dakota and Milwaukee and South Dakota State, you expect to win those games, and they did not this year. So I think a lot of that hurt their confidence going into the Big Ten, and they just really didn't know where they stood. The Michigan State game, I felt like they took a big step forward, really were competitive. I know Michigan State was without Denzel Valentine, but, you know, again, this is a Michigan State team that's definitely top caliber or top half of the Big Ten, and, you know, they competed with them. They got within two in the final 5 minutes or so, and couldn't pull it out. But yeah, they're definitely rebuilding right now, and I you know, next year's team is going to be a lot better. You know, they have some transfers coming in, and this is a team right now that just relies a lot on youth and freshmen, and you know, they're just going to go through their growing pains in the Big Ten.
They have four players right now that are averaging double figures. One of them is Jordan Murphy. Tell us a little bit about him, because he would be, you know, the fans here have seen Carlos Morris, they've seen Nate Mason, they've obviously seen Joey King. What about Jordan Murphy?
He's kind of a surprise this year. I know that Patino was able to get him. He didn't commit to Minnesota, but at the time he was committed to the Virginia Commonwealth last spring. Virginia Commonwealth at VCU lost their coach, Shaka Smart, to Texas. And then he kind of reopened his recruitment from that point. And, you know, Minnesota just got in there and stole him away from a couple of schools, including Indiana, really wanted him. He's an undersized four-man, but the rebounding part of his game, he averaged double figures in high school. But, you know, I mean, if you're a decent athlete in high school, you can average double figures in rebounding. It depends on the competition you play against. But right. He came into the Big Ten, and, you know, he's kind of rebounding at a high rate. He averaged about 10 rebounds coming in his previous five games entering the Big Ten. And he's an athletic kid, long, 7-foot wingspan. He's really just scratching the surface of his offensive game. You know, he likes to slam dunk. He's not really polished offensively yet, but, you know, he's a player that plays with a high motor most of the time. I know his nickname is actually High Motor, Low Motor Murph. So sometimes you don't know which you're going to get, but lately he's been playing with a high motor. Patino put him in the starting lineup for the first time in the last non-conference game versus Milwaukee, and now he's a surefire starter for them, and really, I mean, he's their best player, but he just doesn't really know it yet, and it's not grasping that yet. And once he does, you know, it may not be this year, but you know, he's going to be definitely one to watch.
Minnesota has only played one true road game all year, and they played 7 of their last 9 at home. The other one was that neutral court game against Oklahoma State.
Right.
How concerning is that when you are so homegrown that you finally go out on the road?
You know, Patino talked about that a little bit today. You know, in the Big Ten, you've got these unbelievable environments. You know, Michigan State, Indiana, you know, Ohio State's underrated. You know, but I think that, and that's no knocking. I don't think he was trying to knock Penn State when he said it, but Penn State's the only road environment that is really not as intimidating, because the you know, the fans just don't seem to get too loud there. And I think that regardless of whether the it's an intense crowd or not, I think your point, playing away from home, playing on the road is different. You know, they relied a lot in the Michigan State game on their fans to give them energy. And whether you're playing in a hostile environment where they're screaming on top of you and calling you names, or you're playing a place like Penn State where the fans maybe sit on their hands a little bit and maybe it's not as full, you need to generate your own energy. You know, and I think this is a team that struggled with that even at home, because I wrote about it before, that this year in non-conference play has been the least attended Gopher games at home since 2003-2004 season. But even at home, they're having a hard time, you know, coming up with a decent crowd and generating some energy. So I think on the road is definitely an obstacle for them.
I know they played down in San Juan. Penn State played in that tournament, 4 years ago, I think.
Right.
But outside of that, has he talked about maybe changing is scheduling philosophy just a bit, because, you know, some of this he put together, some was put together for him a little bit probably before he even got there. Has he thought about changing his non-conference scheduling philosophy about home and away?
Yeah, he definitely got stuck with the Puerto Rico tournament. They won the 2010 tournament with Tubby, and that was rescheduled for them to come back. You know, he went on the road to play his father last year to open the season. That was on his own. But for the most part, the non-conference schedule, especially the non-conference tournaments, have been the previous staff. You know, he did talk about that quite a bit, as trying to, you know, put them in a situation where they're maybe not going so far from home definitely within the state. And, I think it's a challenge for them. I mean, two of his 3 years here, they'd gone to Mali, they'd gone to Puerto Rico twice. And, for a young team and for a team that's just still trying to figure out its identity and build chemistry, you know, that's hard on them. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it's not just the traveling and these non-conference tournaments. It's actually the opponents that they're playing at home. And the part of the reason why the fan base has been so disinterested in this team is not just because they're losing. It's just because they're not playing anybody at home. And, you play South Dakota, you play South Dakota State, there'll be a lot of Minnesota kids coming in and a lot of fans that they're coming to see them. But, you know, you're not playing the Iowa States, you're not playing the Marquettes, you're not playing, some of these regional teams that would be a good draw and actually a real good challenge for you in non-conference. It will test you. Next year's team, I think it will be good enough to play an Iowa State or a Marquette at home and really, you know, get the fans interested and generate a lot of, excitement for the team heading into the Big Ten, and they just didn't have that this year.
Finally, Marcus, the veterans at the top, Joey King, Nate Mason, Carlos Morris, they've been the top three scorers this year. Have they really been the glue to what Richard wants to do?
He's been stuck in a situation where a lot of times the veteran guys are not the ones that he relies on the most.
Interesting.
For some reason, you know, the veteran players that he inherited with Tubby, they just weren't tough enough mentally. And I think the players that he has now, who are seniors, he basically had to recruit them to fill gaps. Joey King was a transfer from Drake.
Yep.
And while he's a decent player, you know, he's maybe not a Big Ten level starter. And then Carlos Morris was a junior college player. So this is only his second year in Patino's system, and he's maybe not at that level as well. And, you know, they're two players that are struggling right now with consistency, and they're captains. And, Patino said today, I asked him who the two most vocal players on the team were, and he said two freshmen, Jordan Murphy and Kevin Dorsey, was the point guard. And, you know, that's a bad sign, but that's just the reality of the situation right now. Are the best players on this team, the most vocal players, the best leaders on this team are freshmen, and that goes to the point you're talking about, that this is a rebuilding year.
Absolute pleasure, Marcus. Appreciate the time very much and the insight.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Appreciate it, guys.
We will come back with more in a moment on the Kevin Herr Clambake on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. It was an exciting break. I may just tape the breaks one of these days. Kevin trying to decipher the Midwest roster for tonight's game.
It's broken down by it's sorted by grade, which it's a little difficult when you're calling the game, as you know probably better than anybody. If you're not 100% sure the name and number, and you glance down at the roster, and it's sorted by grade, it's hard to find 14. But you don't have that problem because you have a photographic memory, so you take one look at it, and all of a sudden it's all in your head. So maybe you don't understand.
Like King is 24, Mason's 12, Morris is 11, Murphy's 3, Canote's 21. That's the starters for tonight. No? Bad? That bother you?
That's why I call you Steve Gold. It's kind of like Google, only you don't. All I have to do is text. I don't have Stoogle? To search. Scoogle. Oh, Scoogle. I like that. Stoogle.
Stoogle.
Stoogle? No. Stoogle's not bad.
I see. All right. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, whatever. The engineer does the Jags games. And he says, he did say to me at one point, he says, do you ever look at your charts? I go, no, not really.
You put so much time into those charts, and they're very nice charts.
but I don't think I saw you look at it in the entire time I was in the booth for the blue-white game a couple of years ago. I don't think I ever saw you look at it.
Well, what happens is that as I write it down, I remember it. How about that? That's why. I think it's for whatever reason, I have the ability to write something down and then remember it later.
I could write it down 100 times on a chalkboard and still not remember it.
Right. No, I understand. Everybody has their own way of doing things. I mean, I completely understand that. Just for whatever reason. Now, I've watched a lot of tape and things like that. So, you know, it quickly comes to you. I mean, I watched, and again, I get condensed versions. I mean, it was 72 minutes last night. I watched the entire Michigan State-Minnesota basketball game last night. So I did see all of that. The Redskins are going to play the Packers in the final playoff game. Larry Michael, the play-by-play voice of the Redskins, is going to be on. That'll be the last game of the weekend on Sunday. That's the late game with Green Bay. So we got Larry Michael. Anthony Cassanza from the Jungle is going to be on tomorrow as well to preview the Bengals and the Steelers from the Cincinnati point of view. I figure with Kevin, that balances the show.
Maybe. You know, I have a... Did you find this interesting? I don't know if you did.
All right.
I'm looking at the wild card weekend last night, and as we were doing the show, and I'm looking at the schedule. It's all AFC games on Saturday, all NFC games on Sunday.
Okay. It's fine.
Well, usually they mix it up. I just wondered if there was a reasoning behind it.
Well, I would say for off the top, it's fair for everybody. The NFC teams advance on to next weekend that have played the same day, and the AFC teams advance on the next weekend playing the same day. It doesn't matter. You've got four different networks carrying it, so it really isn't about networks carrying.
No. You make a great point, though, because for years, if you played on Saturday, sometimes you'd play the next game on Saturday or Sunday. Or you could play on Sunday and your next game would be the following Saturday or Sunday. Here, you're going to be playing Saturday that's not going to work either because both the games are split. The divisional playoffs are split on next weekend.
It doesn't matter. They're professionals.
Well, but I thought you had a point there
No, I'm just saying they're just keeping it all safe. It doesn't matter.
So why not have the Broncos and Patriots play the divisional games on Saturday and have the other two NFC teams, the Panthers and the Cardinals, play their games on Sunday?
Because I think idealistically they want the Patriots and the Broncos to be on the back end of the doubleheaders.
But they didn't do that, and I would think that too. Saturday the Patriots open the doubleheader.
Do they? Who's the nightcap?
The Cardinals.
Really?
And then they have the Panthers Broncos. So I mean, your thought makes sense to me. But as I was looking at it yesterday, I thought, well, all the AFC games on Saturday, all of them on Sunday. And then when you said that, I thought, well, I bet that's what they did. Then all the AFC games for the division will be on Saturday and Sunday. No.
Because I know the NFC rotates with the AFC when it comes to the championship games. It doesn't matter where they are. Remember the year the Cardinals made it and they beat the Eagles? They were the opening game and the Steelers played the nightcap in the East.
The AFC
Cardinals
game
and Eagles is the nightcap this time, I think, right?
Yep. The Cardinals is the nightcap for Saturday, and the Broncos will be the nightcap on Sunday. And then on Conference Championship Sunday, the AFC leads it off with a 6:40 start for the NFC.
Yeah. Okay. So the NFC is the nightcap of the championship game.
Correct.
Yeah. That's fine. Look, it's all about TV. It's all a TV show. Relocating to L.A. is part of the TV show. Roger Goodell wants to grow the NFL from a $9 billion enterprise to a $25 billion enterprise. Yeah, I understand that. If I were them, I would put L.A. with one team. Do the best you can to give that team a chance of complete success while dangling the second spot so you can have other franchises maybe use that as leverage to get stadiums they need in their city?
Did you say who you thought would be in L.A.? Of the three that petitioned?
Nope. I did not.
Do you have a gut feeling? Or
no, but I do know as of right now, nobody has enough votes. You need 24 votes to do it.
I wouldn't think that they would want Oakland to move yet again.
I don't know what they want to do. First of all, Oakland Stadium situation is terrible. So let's start with that. The Oakland Stadium situation is awful. And the San Diego situation is just rooted at... Remember we had the writer on for the San Diego Tribune?
Yep.
And I went into the Chargers situation with him. And the politics there is a mess. Idealistically, the NFL would love to keep a team in San Diego because they love having the Super Bowl in San Diego. They love having the Super Bowl in San Diego. It's a great city for it. But if you lose the Chargers, you will never be able to have the Super Bowl in San Diego because the rule is now you must have the Super Bowl in a city that has a team. That's why, for example, the Rose Bowl has not had the Super Bowl in decades. That's why the Rose Bowl hasn't had it.
Steelers-Rams was the last one, wasn't it?
No, the Giants and the Broncos played there. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Do you follow the games?